Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Peter Yeelands from Yeelands Estates. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. You guys are a pretty big vineyard here. Do you want to just give us an idea of what you are and where you're based and what your business is all about?
Yes, okay. Well, we're all about producing high-quality grapes in a sustainable way. We're in the Awatere Valley, which is just south of the Wairoa Valley in Marlborough, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Sauvignon Blanc is our cornerstone here. Our vineyard is 70% Sauvignon, and we've got a reasonable size vineyard here. It's made up of 8 pastoral farms that I've purchased over the last 8 years, and currently, we have just on 1,000 hectares, 2,500 odd acres under vine.
That makes you one of the biggest vineyards, if not the biggest family vineyard.
Yes, we don't get too concerned about the stats, but I do believe it. It's probably the biggest single vineyard in Australasia. It's probably the biggest privately owned vineyard, and probably the biggest family owned vineyard. So, that's just a fact.
Yeah, the numbers.
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. How did you start out, though? Have you always been into wine, or where did you?
No, I would categorise myself as a trader and a jack of all trades and master of none.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the grape growing industry since 1998, and in the wine industry for the last 3 years. So previously, I've had a go at various things. Basically worked for myself all of my working life, generally contracting to local bodies, and in 1968 I ventured into the marine farming side of things, and my family and I pretty much pioneered that industry.
We were some mussel beds and...
Well, not so much mussel beds, these were mussel rafts in the early days. This is all on the sea surface rather than the seabed.
Yeah.
And
is that the ones you see out in Queen Charlotte Sound sometimes?
Not so much the Queen Charlotte Sound, but in the Pelorus Sound.
Yeah.
The Queen Charlotte Sound is in the Marlborough Sounds is more of the recreational one, and the Pelorus Sound is the commercial sound.
It's just so I know, I always get confused. Queen Charlotte, that's when the ferry goes in, isn't it?
That's correct.
And is Pelorus Sound the next one across?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I've done sea kayaking through there, and I've seen lots and lots of mussels up there.
That's right, yeah.
Ah, okay.
So, the family and I, we played a pretty big part in that and made up about 25% of the industry at one time. I spent quite a lot of time setting up a business servicing that industry, building the mussel floats, the plastic mussel floats, and putting the mussel lines in and managing lines,
mm-hmm.
and everything associated with it. I slowly phased out of that and went into farming deer,
yep.
A lot of English deer that were imported from the UK, and built up a what we call a trophy herd, pioneered embryo transplants in that process.
When you say trophy herd, is it for trophy heads on
walls?
Yes,
for trophy heads on walls.
Oh, okay.
And it was quite successful at that, and managed to get a few world-class trophies. I think the best achievement that I did in that area, we got a 44-point spiker. Those that are in the industry will know what that means. But
is that like 44 points on the...
That's for a one-year-old deer to have 44 points on its antlers. So that's pretty incredible. But then I went from the deer farming industry to general farming as well. So
yep.
And into forestry. So currently we have 2 farms apart from the vineyard estate, and we have a large tract of exotic and native forest. And I'm a typical Kiwi boy, love my toys, my machinery, and I've always had plenty about bulldozers and excavators, et cetera, et cetera. And I did, for 15 years, I had a business where I provided concrete gravel and aggregates to the commercial industry.
Yep.
And it was probably part of the reason why I got into growing grapes. I bought a lovely piece of land on the outskirts of Blenheim that needed a lot of work done to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put my toys in there and made it into a lovely park-like setting, and in 1998, I planted my first grapes.
So you almost constructed the terroir, so to speak.
Yes, that's right. This bit of property was a bit of an eyesore, and it was a bog, and it needed a lot of work doing to it. So we essentially made it into a lovely wetland and developed the drier ground and planted a vineyard. I think I could describe that vineyard, which I still own, as the jewel in my crown. It's a very, very nice block.
And then getting more into recent times, starting up Yealands, did you always vision that you would be having a big winery? Because it's a big winery here.
I went on from a block at initial block, then did a 350-hectare block in what we call the North Bank region of the Wairau Valley, and pretty much carved that out of a riverbed and wasteland. And I sold that on, and I used the profits from that to come out here to Seaview and bought my first farm, and over that period, as I said, bought seven other farms. And when I was on about number five farm, I could see that we were just getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves with regard to supply.
Yeah.
And all of that time, I had pretty much been what we call a spot market grower. So the spot market is supplying grapes to wineries that didn't have enough, couldn't procure enough under contract. So I was in a fairly high-risk, high-reward environment.
Yep.
And that works when there is plenty of demand, but it fails as soon as there's perceived to be a surplus. So when I saw that we were getting a bit of ahead of ourselves with production, I decided to build this winery. So that was in, just made the decision in late 2006.
Yep.
And we built it throughout 2007 and built it on time and under budget, which was quite an achievement.
Under budget, yeah.
Yes, it was so the whole building process here went like a dream.
Did you manage it yourself, or did you get a team?
No, we had project managers in, a Christchurch firm, and they did a marvellous job. I did all of the earthworks, as you'd guess.
And, I can imagine you on a big red tractor.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, it's hard to get me off. I used to work into the night. When you're driving a bulldozer in particular, and you've got your hand on the controls, you become attached to the land. You don't want to stop. As I say, I used to go till my wife had come up and chase me back home. And there's a great sense of achievement, contouring land and working the land.
See, a lot of people would just let the, you know, they sort of are more terroir oriented, and they'd say, like, that's what the soils are, that's what we're going to do. But you're more into sculpting.
No, don't get me wrong. We didn't do anything that that wasn't necessary. And all essentially all I did was take out the cracks and the creases, if you like. So 90% of this land was gentle rolling country.
Yep.
But at the bottom of the gullies, we had little chasms and guts. And in places, we had little sheer drop-offs and things like that. And all I did was smooth those out so that we could have reasonable length vine rows and put it into a tidy package.
Yeah, I had a look around earlier, and it is very undulating. You know, you look at Marlborough, and it's Marlborough Plains anyway, and it's dead flat. Everything's straight, 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 and your place is just up and down and all over the place.
When I started out here, there was no vineyards in Marlborough that were on hills or rolling country.
Yeah.
The development had all been done on flat land,
yep.
And that development had been done using a laser light to get your straight lines. And of course, lasers don't work on hills.
No.
The light won't go up and down. So I was fortunate enough to convince Trimble, high-tech GPS. Yes, they're based in Christchurch now, but they weren't based in New Zealand at all. When I approached them, they were American-based. And I managed to convince them to set up an agency in New Zealand, and I bought their first what we might call high-tech, super-accurate GPS. So it's accurate over 20-odd kilometres to 10 millimetres, so it's super accurate.
Oh, okay.
There was GPS systems operational in New Zealand, but they were only accurate to a metre, and you can't build a vineyard like that. So it was that enabled me to develop these vineyards out here on the rolling hills, and I was able to do it what you might call in a grand scale. And after 2 or 3 years... we had other people watching what I was doing and decided to follow suit. So the Awatere Valley, which has been the fastest growing viticulture region in New Zealand, really got its hurry up as a result of that GPS And if it wasn't for the GPS, none of this land would have been developed at all.
Why is that, though? I can't understand why GPS is so important. I can see, you know, it's nice to get nice straight vineyard rows, but
a bit of
string would give you straight.
For example, you can't run a piece of string out here for very far on the windy day. And even wire, it's very hard. Some of our vine rows are 350 metres long, and to say they're super accurate as far as parallel goes. And all of your development, when you've got a GPS, it's actually done from your tractor seat. When you're developing land on the flat, you actually get surveyors to come in, and they put a peg in where each of your strainer goes, and then you use a laser to get your straight line. Look, I have to say, I did my first vineyard using wire and string, and it wasn't very pretty, and I wouldn't have liked to have carried on doing it like that, but okay. I knew no other way in those days.
You said that you saw in, 2006, that the supply was going to start creeping ahead of demand?
You know, being a spot market supplier, you had a good feel for what was going on.
Yeah.
Because you were constantly dealing at that upper end of the market that described the supply and demand. So I didn't have the comfort of a contract sitting back and knowing each year that it was going to go. So as I say, I had a good feel for it, and I could see that we were all getting a bit carried away. And I've always realised that what goes up comes down, and that nothing is forever. And I just thought that it's time to play safe and safeguard my investment by building a winery. With a winery, we can put the product into something that we'll keep. And in August of 2008, this winery was finished, all bar the holding tanks inside.
Yep.
But we had the 2008 vintage in this winery, and 3,500 tonne of grapes were harvested that year. And I had a $24 million winery without one customer. So it was quite daunting.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit of madness. But it was far better than having 3,500 tonne of grapes on your vines.
Just left to rot, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. So it was a good move, and one that I've never regretted. But of course, I ended up starting this operation up in the at the start of the recession. So we've had a headwind ever since. We're still in a bit of a recession, hopefully coming out of it. But it's been a pretty interesting journey. It's been a very, very exciting, and we've done, I believe, extremely well. And I think probably far better than a lot of people ever anticipated, and proud of the team that I've got, and wait till this wind drops, and we'll leave a vapor trail.
Speaking of wind, Terry, it's quite windy here, isn't it? You're quite close to the sea.
It's very windy. I believe that this vineyard is probably one of the best located vineyards in the whole of Marlborough. If you're in the Wairoa Valley, probably 80% of places in the Wairoa Valley suffer from frost, early frost or late frost. Mm. Even in the Awatere, a large portion of it is frost-prone. But here at Seaview, where we are, we don't have frost. And I dare say we haven't had one since I've been here, and it's not likely that we will. So I'm pretty lucky, because if we had to have wind machines, frost machines here, it would be an astronomical cost.
Yep.
So we have the advantage. We've got lovely tiwā here. And all of this land that this vineyard's on used to be submerged. Everywhere we dig, we can find shells.
Okay.
Soil has got a lot of, it's very mineralised. There's a lot of magnesium and a lot of sodium. So our wines here, the whole of the Awatere is pretty typical of what we produce.
Awatere wines always seem a bit greener to me than maybe the Wairoa River or the Wahopai.
Yes, I think everyone has different perceptions. The Awatere, I think it's quite interesting. I've seen some adverts in the paper for wineries wanting to buy Sauvignon this year. There's not a lot of them, of course, but not a lot of ads, that is. But everyone is asking for Awatere fruit. So I think Awatere's getting to be a premium. So I'm pleased with that positioning.
You said you got no windmills or anything like that for frost protection. Notice there's very little bird netting out here as well. Everywhere else, Marlborough is covered in bird netting at the moment, and the birds must be looking at your place with licking their lips.
And when they look at this and say, crikey dick, where do we land? Because there is very few trees out here. It's quite a big expense. And, of course, birds always love to be able to fly to a tree to get out of danger. So when we first come here, we put bird netting up, and after a couple of seasons, we realised that we didn't really need to. We get a little bit of bird damage, but that might be 1%, and I'm happy to live with that. Yeah. And not only that, we sort of love to see birds around to an extent. Yeah. We have falcons on the property that tend to sort of keep the birds away. A lot of Australian magpies that tend to sort of be quite territorial. But some of the perimeter areas tend to get a bit of bird peck, but on the scale of this, it would be totally uneconomic to put netting on anyway.
Sure, sure. Okay. What about wind? It is quite windy here, and wind is great for keeping frost away, but it's also, during fruit set, can be a bit of a problem with uneven fruit set. Do you find that's an issue?
Uneven fruit set here is normally determined by the colder weather, the southerly in particular.
Yep.
I don't know that the wind is detrimental, as long as it's a nice warm wind on a good day to the fruit set. But we're in the middle of Marlborough, if you like. The southerlies come in, and by the time they get to here, they're starting to peter out. The northerlies come in, and by the time they get here, they're petering out. But notwithstanding that, it is windy, and the vines here, they grow under some pretty hard conditions. But that, to me, is good. It enhances the flavours, and we get nice thick skins. So, you know, it's all positive. And, of course, growing vines on the hill, we get plenty of sunshine hours on them. So I think we're very, very lucky.
You've got slopes going in all sorts of directions because it is quite rolling. Do you find that you get uneven ripeness coming through, or does that just add to the complexity?
Yes, we can get uneven ripeness, but we do try and create our rows to manage that. So we'll try not to have one row going from a northerly face into a southerly face. When I first came here, I probably didn't manage that as well as I could have, but we've learnt since, you know, to look after that. But often what we'll do is we'll handpick the higher, more exposed grapes that come on riper first, and they're the real taste buds. They're just bouncing with energy and flavours. And so we'll handpick those, and then we'll put the machine harvester down the row and take out the gullies. We just manage it.
And the last thing is, when you look at your website, you really push your environmental credentials. What do you think is probably the best aspects of what you do here? I've had a good look around, and I've spoken to your environmental officer, Peter. What's his last name, Peter?
Peter Mann.
Peter Mann, and had a nice chat to him. What would you say is the key things for you?
Key thing here is looking after the land, and of course not taking out any more than we put in. So as I said earlier, this land here is very, very salty and full of minerals, and all of our growing is done on the topsoil. So we have to be very conscious of looking after that topsoil. So to that end, we put a lot of mulch on. We get excited when we dig a hole and see 15 worms all coming out. So that you know, if you've got good land, everything else will come right by itself. So all of our environmental stuff centres around looking after the land.
Excellent. All right then, Peter, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Good.
Thank you very much.
No worries.